Welcome to Financially Savvy in 20 Minutes, a podcast hosted by me, Natalie Torres-Adad, an international award-winning author, two-time TEDx speaker, and investor, along with Vera Egli, an investor, sales, and marketing pro, and multi-language podcaster. We will share the tips and tricks from interviews with self-made entrepreneurs, leaders, and those who have attained financial freedom while learning financial literacy in multiple languages. Hello, hello. Welcome to Financially Savvy in 20 Minutes. I am so excited to be doing, I'm always excited. I need to come up with a new word. But today, our episode is in the Bay Area, San Francisco. And I'm actually here with someone that I met through the We All Grow Summit in 2019. And I wanted to be able to follow up with her and do a one-on-one because everywhere I go, I've been getting so much. I get stopped by these amazing earrings. Actually, I'm wearing some new ones, but these earrings that I just adore, it's this poderosa that I've been wearing at events. And it's for those that they see it, they think, oh my God, that's totally my word. That's what I need. And so when I started, and that's something typically I don't necessarily wear big earrings that'll say a word. And so for me, it's been a style change, which I've loved. But more importantly, it's because it's supporting women like her that are doing amazing things in our community. She'll tell you a little bit more about how she started her pop-ups and what she's been doing for her business. But for Financially Savvy in 20 Minutes, I wanted people to understand that it all comes from a starting place. A lot of us will say, we had this conversation earlier, that we don't want to necessarily start a business or start a side hustle because it's like, oh, I don't have my social media stuff together. I don't even know how to do social media. I don't want to do videos. I don't want to be in front of the camera. Or it's difficult to even figure out how you want to display it. We were just talking about how my nails are never done because they're gone within a day, you know? So it's like, how would I display something as far as earrings? But as you can see, I'm wearing some of her fabulous ones, Poderosa as well. And she has all these amazing empowering words for women in Spanish, which is so cool. And I think being able to highlight people that are in very big communities that are Latin-based, that are Latinx-based, San Francisco is one of them. We're actually in an area. And today we're filming, if you're watching this on YouTube, not through iTunes, is from Calle 24,
yeah, right? Yeah, it's Calle 24 organization. So what they do is they preserve the integrity of what is known as a cultural district, the Latino cultural district here in San Francisco. I actually grew up in the neighborhood about a block away, but is what's happening with many neighborhoods, there's a lot of gentrification. And so we experienced that here in this particular neighborhood that is a Latino cultural district. And so that's what this organization does, is preserve the culture. And so we have some really fabulous events that they take care of and they do every year.
And Tanya, if you could tell us a little bit more about, because obviously there's organizations like this that are 501c3s, that are nonprofits that are creating real change. And I just found out they're also fiscally sponsored by the city, which is, wow, unique and incredible. Mm-hmm. You created not only a safe space, but a creative space during your pop-ups. What was your first one like for someone that's watching this or listening to thinking, I need to do a pop-up, but I'm too afraid? What are the doubts that you had to overcome, and how did that go for you, and do you do those again?
Yeah, thank you. So my first pop-up was nerve-wracking, as you can imagine, because I think with any event, you're scared whether people are going to show up, right? So, I mean, all I know is I just put my 200%. I was flyering everywhere. I was going out every night. I was going to different events. You know, the old saying of you're going to get what you put in is so true. So my first pop-up happened to be very successful. We had over 100 people show up. Wow. And I think it really had to be because I put in the work. I flyered everywhere. I told everybody about it. I put it on Facebook, on Instagram, on social media, and I think that helped a lot. And so it was a successful pop-up.
Awesome. And to get 100 people at your first one is a big deal.
It's a big deal, yeah.
I mean, I don't sell products the same in that sense where I would have a pop-up, but I've done presentations and workshops, and I remember starting out, there was some workshops that I could remember to the team, be like, 8 people showed up that paid, or even if they were free too, it was like, okay, there's less than 10 people, but you still, for me, I'm like, I still have to give it my all and act like there's 1,000 people in the audience, because now it is at that point where I think that's important for people to understand. Pop-ups don't necessarily like have 1,000 people showing up right away. It's like, if you're lucky enough, maybe some of your friends and family show up to support, but ideally it's people that want to come and shop. So thanks for sharing that, because I know there's people that are afraid to do it. And sometimes we compare ourselves with other entrepreneurs, with other people that are creating artwork, and say, I don't have that following, or, you know, especially on social media. Let's be real with that. You know, people are like, oh, I don't have 100,000 followers. It's like, well, sometimes I'm like, I know people have a lot of followers that have no money.
Yeah.
And that's the complete opposite. So yeah. I think it's really important for people to just kind of have a clear sense of what they have,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So one of the questions I want to ask you, because this is one of the questions I always ask, is do you remember the first time that you got paid, whether this was, didn't have to be your 9-to-5, maybe it was your side hustle, that made you think differently about working for someone else, that possibly it was more importantly for you to be like, oh, I could make some more money on my side. What was that?
Yeah. That's a great question, because I think it kind of leads into why I do what I do now. So I've been working since I was 16 years old, and my first job was as a janitor. My mom is a janitor, my stepdad is a janitor, they're part of the union. So here in San Francisco, janitorial work, we get paid pretty well. Starting at the time for a 16-year-old was $16 an hour.
Wow.
Now starting pay is $18 an hour. So that was really good.
Especially in San Francisco, you need it.
Yeah, it's a very expensive city. So that was my very first job. When it comes to money, we don't like to talk about it. And I know that in my household, we did not talk about money. Mm-hmm. So nobody showed me how to save. Nobody showed me or talked to me about money. So one of those things where I really had to learn in my late 20s, probably. And learning all these different ways to save money and be better with your money, it really, for me, didn't start to happen until my 30s.
Wow.
I'm a case manager by day, so I work with a lot of clients.
Awesome.
One of the things that I did in my 20s, that, you know, again, I always tell people, find what works best for you.
Yeah.
For me in my 20s at the time, it wasn't keeping my money in the bank. I don't know why, it just wasn't.
I hear this often, and I wanted to say, maybe it is a cultural thing, because I hear, or not even, I hear people say often, oh, I have money in my wallet, I need to burn it. And then, like, you know, I need to get rid of it. And it's kind of that, the mentality that we're taught. Yeah, okay.
It's that, because even though it's in the bank, I still have an ATM debit card that allows me to spend. So for me, in my 20s, for me not to spend the money, I kept it at home.
Yes.
And I kept it in the drawer or wherever. But it was because I felt at the time that if I had it in the bank with my ATM, it was easy for me to spend it.
Yes.
Whereas if it's at home, you sometimes forget where it is, which is a good thing.
Yes.
And also, for some reason, how can I explain it? Because there is something magical about seeing your money and counting it and knowing that every time you add some money to it, it gets bigger and the amount gets bigger.
Yes.
Whereas with the bank, you see the number, but it's somehow,
it's a visual thing. Yeah, you know, I think it's something with the virtual, that's what we live in right now. It's like, I start to see that more people spend more because everything's virtual instead of letting go of the cash, which the tangible part is so much difficult to depart from. But I think it's something that we see that can be that difference. And there's a book, I think it was by Luis Barajas, that was talking about Latinos and their money. And he's like, everyone has that grandma, and if it's not you, but it's your grandma that has the money hide under the mattress.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally understand that. I had my grandma who used to hide her jewelry in dalcos, you know, the baby powder. And the first time I was grabbing the random jar, and I'm like, why do you have your gold rings in this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she's like, oh, because it gets stolen. And it's like, okay, instead of having it a safe or, you know, things like that, that you start to figure out. So I think this is a good segue of, when you are starting, now that you have your side hustle as well, your business that you're growing, she's getting a lot of traction. I'm based in Atlanta, she's in San Francisco, and when I go places, people are like, oh yeah, I just bought her earrings, I just got them, and I'm like, this is amazing to see that you're in multiple states, you know. And I think for a lot of people when they're starting out, they're like, I'm just happy if one person buys my product, right?
Yeah.
And now being able to track it and figuring out how much more, we were discussing a little bit, I think for a lot of people is, not only how do we make our money stretch, but how do we importantly figure out, okay, what is our inventory going to look like? You know, starting out, I know a lot of people say, oh, I could only purchase when I get an actual order. You know, they'll get maybe a bulk of something, but when they get the order. Have you done any tricks in the past or even now that you're just like, okay, this is how I'm going to make more money if I purchase something?
Great question. So here's the thing too, because every business owner, the reasons they go into business are very different. Mm-hmm. So I share, and I'm very transparent about the fact that when I vend, the money that I make from vending helps me pay for things like my son taking a soccer class or extracurricular activities. So for me, it's been interesting because I started out with investing $300.
Okay.
So when that inventory comes in and I sell that inventory, I still go back to only reinvesting the $300 or the amount that I choose, because the reality for me is that the money I make is helping me pay for extra things for my family. So that's why it's tricky and it's very different for me. So I am not in a position right now where everything I make can go back into the business, right? So that's what's tricky and that's what's different for everyone. And that's why the pop-up for me is so important, because at least the people that I work with, I know that they're vending because it really does support their family in some way or another.
And this is key, and I love how you said with the pop-up, it's that you pick particular times of the year, right? One or two that you're doing, because then you really put full first, and that's like, you know, you have months in advance to promote it, and then you get an actual good sales, right? And I sometimes see people doing pop-up like every other month or every month pretty much. And then they're like, I'm not making any money. So I think that's a very strategic, that the way you do it, you're like, no, it's planned well in advance and it's not as many multiple ones. Maybe because you're not as big yet, but that's actually really smart too when you're starting out.
But
right?
There's also a reason, because we, and we talked a little bit about it. So again, I'm a vendor. I know what it's like, right? So I don't have more than one person selling the same thing. So I really do curate the pop-up, because one, I don't want to compete with my
co-vendor
over here that's also selling jewelry similar to mine, right? I don't want us to compete for money. But I also want to create a space where the purpose is for us to sell and make money, especially because, again, the most of the people that I work with that I know make and sell what they create is because it supports their family in some way or another. So when I do events, there's three things. I want to make sure that, you know, we're not selling the same. I want to be conscious of the amount of vendors I have, because let's think about it. Everything is numbers, right? So if I have 60 vendors compared to 15, again, you're not going to be competing with those dollars. And third, let's be real. We want to sell and we want to make money, because for most of us, this helps us sustain our family. So those are the three criteria. Not the same product, making sure I don't have a ton of vendors, and then because of these two, it's to sell.
And you know, I think that's so smart, and thank you for doing something like, because I've been to a few conferences myself, especially starting out as an author, and I was very particular. I'm like, wait, if I'm going to a conference where they're all Latina authors, all talking about money, you know, granted there isn't, that'd be great if there was, maybe it's in the future. But it's true, it's like we're competing with each other. Instead, I actually specifically said, okay, these are the conferences that are looking for educational authors. And then I saw there was only like less than 10% were people of color, and then a percentage of that was even smaller, that was bilingual content, right? So, and for me, I knew that it was worth the investment. So for you doing, being able to do that, I think it helps the vendor. Anyone that's thinking about doing some kind of a pop-up or a fair or something like that, I think it's smart. What you're saying is, how can you maximize bringing a lot more traffic, right? A lot more audience that's going to purchase from you, as opposed to like saying, I'm going to have 60 vendors at a convention. And I've been to some where I'm like, that's way too many and not enough people to shop from. So
exactly.
Something that helps, right?
And also the fee. I'm very, so again, I'm very strategic and very conscious of how I go about with my specific pop-up. The other thing is the fee. I really, for my pop-up, I don't charge more than $50. So
I love it.
And
it's
right
affordable.
Now,
absolutely,
it's
affordable.
Super affordable. And for the pop-up right now, I mean, whatever money I get from the vendors, that actually goes into the pop-up, because you want to make the pop-up successful. So I provide the canopy, and then I try to get entertainment.
Oh, wow, you provide that. I've been to places where it's basically the lot, and you just have to provide everything, maybe the table. So that's good to know. It's like for some people, if they already included the canopy, that's the price. And some places, you got to bring everything. It's happened where I'm in the sun, and I'm like, why didn't they tell us we got to bring our own canopy, right? So good to know for those that are figuring out how much money to spend when you're going to these type of events. For you, can you think of, like, especially I always ask people what their money story is, but Can you think of maybe someone that you felt inspired by to do this type of, not only the work that you're doing, creating actual jewelry that means something, but made you think that this is possible for me to do? Because I know I come across many, too many people that are like, oh, I always had the dream, but I just couldn't. What made you, do you have someone in mind that did that for you, or that you thought, man, I would love to be like that in that sense?
I don't, not necessarily, but I want to go back to something you asked, because I do know that, you know, I've been working since I was 16. I'm going to be 43 this year, I think.
Amazing. So, it's the genetics.
But I, again, the reason I bring it up is because I've had tons of jobs. And, I mean, I think we are some really hard-ass workers.
Yes.
And I think that in my time frame of having a job and working for other people, I don't want to do that. And this is why I continue to have these side hustles and these side businesses, because I would love to get to a point where I can work for myself. Because as hard as I know that I work and you work and my father and my mother and my sister and everybody that I know, we are really hard workers.
Yes.
And the idea of putting that time and effort so that somebody else can reap the benefits, it kind of just me toca mucho el corazón. So for me, it's always been about, I would love to get to a point where I don't need to work for anybody else.
Yeah.
As much effort and time I put into a job, why don't I do it for myself? I think that's really been, at a very young age, I could tell where I was like, I would like to get to a point where I can work for myself and not have to work so hard for somebody else to tell me what time I can eat my lunch, tell me what time I can start, what time I can end, and then not pay me what I believe I'm worth.
And as entrepreneurs, we end up starting very early and usually end up in the last ones there. But it's having that, when it's something you love, it's a little bit different, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what it is, as far as trying to feel committed. But thank you for sharing your story, because I think it's important to be able to share this with people that are, especially if they are selling a product, they're selling themselves to the service, you know? It's part of who your brand is. It's what you represent. And we've been talking about this, where the representation matters, especially when I see women rocking jewelry, hoops. It's part of the culture that we're part of. And so it's really different. And it's very difficult when we see, you know, major brands that are not only copying, but really taking away what our cultures have been wearing for generations, really. So it's wonderful to see that women like yourself are doing the best that they can to make sure we're representing our cultures, but we bring economic growth within our community, especially in San Francisco, right, where we know it's the sixth, it's one of the six most expensive cities to live in the entire country. I saw Seattle being one of them. We have also Boston, New York, Manhattan, and I think I'm going blank in New York as well. And Hawaii, Honolulu. Those are the top six most expensive cities.
Wow.
And I think people forget how much rent can be. And so taking 20 minutes out of the day to figure out, like, how can I make a little bit more money in my side hustle?
Yeah.
Should I start my side hustle? Should I do pop-ups? I think you probably help someone just listening to this and be like, okay, if she did it, I can do something small with at least 15 minutes. And we all know 15 vendors.
Yeah.
How many of us have friends that are like, oh, yeah, so-and-so's a tequila maker. So-and-so, you know, selling jewelry, clothing, or, you know, some kind. So why not have more of these community pop-ups that can bring more economic growth to each one of us?
Yeah.
So thank you so much. So how can
thank
people
you.
Connect with you, contact you, especially so they can get some lovely jewelry?
Yes, so my pop-up Instagram page is Mercadito del Encanto, and the jewelry is House of Jefas.
Ooh, yes, you'll be seeing me tagging this, House of Jefas. But make sure you obviously not only get yours, but more importantly, you know, use the advice that she has, because I think it's cool to see the steps, and I look forward to, who knows, you're going to see her all over the place. I mean, I
hope so.
That's the goal.
Yeah.
So thank you for being part of
this.
It's fun. Thank you. And please make sure to subscribe and leave your comments and reviews. To learn more about the podcast, check out the website and Instagram, Financially Savvy in 20 Minutes, and watch interviews on YouTube and IGTV. To become a sponsor or hire us for your next workshop or speaking engagement, please visit financiallysavvyin20minutes.com. All it takes is 20 minutes daily to become financially savvy. Music by Nikki and produced by Robert DeLude.